This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, chapters 17 and 18, Educational Decree number 24, and Dumbledore's Army. In these chapters, Sirius almost gets apprehended.
Yeah, that was scary. Yes, yeah. Yeah, in a very interesting way as well.
And Harry is fighting the man.
Man, I was going to make a joke, but it is so dated, so I'm not going to do it because it is very, very much my generation, damn the man, save the empire. So shout out to Empire Records. But yay. Yes.
So we pick up like the Monday after the weekend where they visited Hogsmeade. They went to the Hogshead and they decided we're going to have this little Defense Against the Dark Arts group.
Yes. Yeah. And kind of as predicted, I hope I'm not jumping, but there's a notice from the High, it says, by the order of the High Inquisitor of Hogwarts, all student organizations, societies, teams, groups, and clubs are henceforth disbanded.
Yes. Yeah. Permission to reform may be sought from High Inquisitor. Definition of a society, team, group, or club is hereby defined as a regular meeting of three or more students. And it's like, you know, Harry's immediately like, this isn't a coincidence. She knows.
You know, it's just like Hermione frustrated me with this because it's like for somebody who thinks things through so well, like I've just kind of felt she didn't fully think this through. And this is kind of very predictable what has happened. I didn't realize it would happen so quickly. I've got to say, from reading these books, I'm like, it'll come like three chapters away, but it's pretty almost immediate that this happens.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, Ron and Harry try to go tell her, go up the dormitory, but the staircase to the girls' dormitory turns into a slide, and Ron slides down and bounces on his ass.
Yeah. Yes. And this was, I was like, oh, maybe a little, I don't know. He said, Hermione says, well, it's an old fashioned rule. But it says in Hogwarts of History that the founders thought boys were less trustworthy than girls anyway. So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah,
I don't know how that works in modern times.
England. Yeah, like it is definitely a double standard. It is buying into the stereotype that women have more control over themselves, like sexually and physically, than boys do, which does not contradict my experience, but
it's so hard. I mean, man, yeah, it is one of those things that you kind of, it's like, yeah, that's sexist, but you know, you kind of, it definitely left me very conflicted in how I felt about it. So It's fine. Got to slide down a slide. So
yeah,
good times.
And then they pull Hermione over to see the sign. And she's like, how did she find out? One of those idiots must have blabbed. And she's like, no, they can't have. And Ron thinks she's just appealing to their, like, everyone's sense of honor and integrity. And Hermione's just like, no, I put a jinx on that list. We will know exactly who blabbed. And whoever did, they will very much regret it.
Now, that I did not expect. Like, I kind of was, and I'm sure last episode, I was like, why is she having people sign the name, you know, this paper? I sometimes forget that we're in a magical world, so there are things that you can do to kind of cover this. So she did think that through. Some other parts she didn't.
Yeah, so she thought it through enough that, but again, there's a lot of debate in the fandom whether it was ethical of Hermione to make the have the students sign this binding contract, not knowing that what the consequences would be if you broke the contract.
Yeah, that's probably one of my least favorite things that people do. So, like, you know, just be forthcoming. You know, don't be sneaky about it. So
honestly, I don't have a problem with it because I'm more, again, it's like a weird Machiavellian Hufflepuff thing where it's like, you know, you said you weren't gonna like blab and you signed it, like, you know, like the your decision to like betray that contract or what you said you were should not be determined by how bad the punishment is. You should have just, on general principle, you know, stuck to what you said you were gonna do.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand that as well. I think that if it's, you know, I think about signing various petitions. This is kind of where my mind went. I've signed petitions for maybe a controversial thing. And then I'm like, how is this going to bite me in the ass? You know, or how is this going to come back to me? I'm simply signing a petition, but I'm enough of a like catastrophist that that goes through my head. So, I mean, I still would have rather her been forthcoming. Maybe that's me, like my very, very Hufflepuff, like mm-hmm. base, just to, transparency is, mm-hmm. is something I hold very, very near and dear.
Yeah. So as far as I know, like none of the students, you know, has blabbed to Umbridge. Otherwise, you know, they would have known.
Right.
And everyone's like freaking out and everyone's like trying to go to the Gryffindor table. And Hermione's like, you idiot, sit down. We'll talk later.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just chill. Children, calm down.
Mm-hmm. And Quidditch is also a part of things that have been disbanded.
That was a little bit of a surprise. I mean, because, I mean, if when we're thinking about it, Umbridge, of course, she's not going to put any sort of like, you know, precedent on that. But I think it was really a shock to the students. That's kind of something that they just kind of assume is just fine. But
I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast in some aspect of, you know, the idea of not wanting people to meet and not having any form of civil society. You know, that's a big problem in countries like Turkey and Iran, where it's like, even if it's something that's starts off as totally apolitical, just that people are meeting to discuss like-minded, you know, things, that is a danger. There's been issues of, you know, people being arrested or getting in trouble in Iran just for like being in a yoga class. And they wanted to say it was because it was like mixing the genders, which is, you know, haram. But, you know, the reality is they just don't want any forms of civil society.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And so definitely here we're seeing, you know, not only did Umbridge get the tea about this club, but it's like, oh, so none of you guys can have any clubs to talk about anything.
Yeah, she's definitely wants to, you know, blind allegiance, things like that, like, which is problematic. And I thought of an example of something of people grouping together and having ideas. It reminded me of a book called Erotic Stories for Punjabi Widows, which is kind it's a book club, you know, and then of course what happens, they discuss things and, you know, it affects their outside life, much like reading and, you know, meeting people that has that effect. So of course you'd want to restrict that.
Mm-hmm. And so they go to History of Magic. Binns is droning on. And there's a tap, tap, tap at the window.
I know. Poor Hedwig. Hedwig's
hurt. Yeah, I thought of you when she's like, how is she going to react to poor Hedwig being injured?
It broke my heart. And, you know, she shows Harry her little, like, busted wing. And it's like, no. It's so sad.
Yep. And so Harry's immediate thought is to take her to Hagrid, but Hagrid ain't here.
Man, I hate that feeling. And I know this is like the, this is, I am not trying to make myself sad, but sometimes, like, you know, I'll be upset and I'll be like, oh, where's my cat? Because I used to like pet her for comfort and she's not there. So that feeling is kind of what I've imagined Harry was feeling, like, oh, my buddy's not here, you know? Oh, that thing I could look for help. So I have to have plan B. So
yeah, plan B is going to Grubbly Prank. And since she's not teaching at the very moment, Harry's brilliant skills of deduction is that she must be in the staff room. Because, you know, teachers are like robots and they just sit there until to be wound up for their next class.
I mean, that's what I used to think teachers. No, I'm kidding. When you're a kid, it's like, oh, they don't have a life outside of.
And then you go see them out at the fancy Italian restaurant on a date.
Yeah. How awkward. Right. Exactly.
Yep. And so, well, first of all, the gargoyles are giving him a little bit of sass.
Yeah, where the hell did, first of all, I love gargoyles. And I don't think gargoyles have had a place like this before, have they? Or have I overlooked it? I don't remember them predominantly.
I think this is the first instance of our, like, talking gargoyles, like the statue serving as the sort of, like, password holder, like the portrait of the fat lady.
That's cool. Gargoyles, that's what I would want. I wouldn't want a portrait. I would want a gargoyle. I love gargoyles. Okay.
And so Harry hears footsteps and it's Professor McGonagall that shows up.
Yeah. And she's about to flip her lid because she's like, did you get detention again? Like, oh my God. And he's like, no.
No. Injured owl, did you say? Professor Grubbly Pink appeared at Professor McGonagall's shoulder, smoking a pipe and holding a copy of the Daily Prophet.
What an image. I don't know what to do with that yet.
Yep. And so Grubbly Planks, you know, looking over Hedwig, she's like, looks like something attacked her. Can't think of what she would have, though. Thestrals will sometimes go for birds, but of course Hagrid's got the Hogwarts Thestrals well-trained not to touch owls.
Yeah, so I don't know what got after Hedwig.
Yeah, and at least not in this chapter.
Not in this chapter, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, and McGonagall's just like, where was Hedwig traveling from?
Yeah, called out Harry.
And Harry's like, London? And they shared an exchange that understood that London meant number 12, Grimmauld Place.
Yes, exactly.
And McGonagall's just like, Potter! Yes, Professor? Bear in mind, she said quickly and quietly, her eyes on the scroll in his hand, that channels of communication in and out of Hogwarts may be being watched, won't you?
Yeah, it's good for Harry to have that reminder. He's being really risky. He always is just, again, pushing it and pushing it and pushing it.
Yep. And finally, all the little parchment says is today, same time, same place.
Of course, it's from Sirius.
Yep. And, I was just saying to Ron, what if someone had tried to intercept Hagrid? I mean, she's never been hurt on a flight before, has she?
I'm disgusting to hurt Hedwig.
Yeah, it's a new level of low for Dolores Jane Umbridge.
Yes, indeed.
Like, I don't know. Never mind. I started thinking of another book I was reading, but you're about to read it, so I won't say anything.
Oh, you can. You can.
No.
Okay.
No. And so they go down into Snape's classroom, like just outside, congregating outside the door. And of course, Draco Malfoy shooting his mouth off and is like, yes, Umbridge gave the Slytherin Quidditch team permission to continue playing straight away. Blah, blah, blah. Get something a little more original, Malfoy.
Right. And then he makes a comment. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, it's like, my father says it's a matter of time before the ministry has him carted off to St. Mungo's. Apparently they've got a special ward for people whose brains have been addled by magic.
And who does that set off? That sets off Neville, who I think nobody expects for that to, like, trigger him. I mean, Harry does, but Harry made a promise to Dumbledore that he wouldn't say anything. But Neville's like,
He is just like, he doesn't, he is about to pummel Malfoy, and he was even prepared to, like, go at Crabbe and Goyle, like, anyway, because he was just so worked up.
I'd love to see it. Love to see it.
Yes. And, you know, and to the point that Ron and Harry have to, like, hold Neville, and, of course, Snape is just, like, fighting 10 points from Gryffindor.
Good Lord, they're trying to, like, help stop a fight, and Snape's like, no. Can't even do that. Like,
oh my god, that makes me think of there's one meme of Keanu Reeves where he has like shoulder length hair, but then he doesn't have his beard and scruff, and he's just a bare skin. And the heading of the meme is like, looks like Keanu Reeves about to take 10 points from Gryffindor because he looks like Snape.
Oh my god, he cut. Oh no, no. My Keanu Reeves crush has just cracked a little bit, so but I can totally see it. Good Lord.
Mm-hmm. And so they all go into the dungeon, and Snape is like, you will notice that we have a guest with us today.
Good old Umbridge, right?
Observer. Yeah, and Harry's just so conflicted because he hates both of them so much, and he doesn't know which one he wants to win.
Right, right. But it's interesting because Snape obviously is no fan of Umbridge either.
No, like, you know, certainly someone as proud and arrogant as Snape is not going to take kindly to, like, his teaching inventory being taken by someone who is not a professor, who does not have a PhD in pedagogy. Like, fuck this bitch.
Right, right, right. She's just throwing, you know...
Not that Snape isn't unworthy of observation and evaluations given to how he abuses children. But.
Right. That's a whole nother, there needs to be another Inquisitor for that. But
yeah. So was it, well, the class seems fairly advanced for their level, though I would question whether it is advisable to teach them a potion like the strengthening solution. So it's not even defense against the dark arts. She doesn't want them, you know... like, basically, they're so paranoid that she's been... Fudge is so paranoid that Fudge has instructed Umbridge that they're not allowed to be, like, you know, competent or reasonably talented in any way, shape, or form.
No. And I don't know if we were going to talk about this, but she's very... She, like, very much undermines and embarrasses Snape, too. I don't know if we're going to talk about that. Yes, but...
Because she's like, how long have you been teaching at Hogwarts? 14 years. You applied first for the Defense Against the Dark Arts post, I believe. Yes, said Snape quietly. But you were unsuccessful. Snape's lip curled. Obviously. Oh my god, Alan Rickman delivered this beautifully in his, like, monosyllabic monotone with so many pauses.
I'm excited to see it. Good old Snape. But I just thought that that was so, I mean, that just kind of shows you, she almost knows exactly the buttons to press with certain people. Like, how does she know that? I don't know. But
yeah. And she's like, you know, why would Dumbledore not give you this position? And she's like, he's like, you'll have to ask him. Oh, I shall, said Professor Umbridge with a sweet smile. I suppose this is relevant, Snape asked. Oh, yes, said Professor Umbridge. Yes, the ministry wants a thorough understanding of teachers' backgrounds. So this is a jab at, you know, Snape, we know, in Goblet of Fire, in his anger and somewhat desperation to try and convince Fudge that Voldemort is back, literally showed him his old Dark Mark tattoo.
Right, yeah.
And so he has already admitted to the minister and the ministry that that's what he used to be, that where his loyalties lie, and so...
Yeah. Yeah, it's just... You know, I don't really have any sort of sympathy for Snape ever, but it's just kind of like when you have this character who's kind of, you know, seems a little bit like Teflon, and you just know this gets under his skin, and the fact that she knows how to get under his skin just kind of shows you how malicious mm-hmm. and deviant she is.
Yeah, and that she takes such pleasure in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, Snape, like a reasonable 35-year-old man... takes it out on Harry and is like, no marks again then, Potter.
Yep. prime maturity. We've got some very people-interested development in these, some adults, I guess, mm-hmm. that would be Yes. I was thinking of Sirius and Snape, both of them.
Like, honestly, as I get older, I begin to see these two as two sides of the same coin, because they are both in states of arrested development, but for very different reasons. And were enemies and nemesis at school, but they actually are quite alike.
Interesting.
Yep. And so what happens? So they go to Professor Trelawney's class, and Trelawney's like, you know what to do, or I'm such a substandard teacher that you have never learned how to open a book.
Poor girl. She's having a rough day. We've been there, Trelawney. I felt she obviously let that rattle her a lot, her results or whatever from Umbridge.
Yes. And so it seems as though Trelawney has been placed on probation.
Oh, I don't know how to feel about this. Because, well, I do, you know, we've talked about divination and things like that, but I think what is really interesting is Harry is like, hey, Hermione, you and Umbridge have something in common. You both think this is BS. And she's kind of like, you know, interesting observation of on Harry's part to kind of call her out, Hermione, on that too.
Yeah. But if anything, I think, you know, there are criticisms that could be made against Trelawney, which are legitimate, in the same way that there could be criticisms that will be laid to Hagrid as a teacher, and they also be legitimate. So,
yeah.
But again, not again, there's the whole running joke in the Harry Potter and Sacred Text podcast about the failed pedagogy at Hogwarts. It's not that Hogwarts doesn't need some improvement, but of course you don't want this ministry bitch who doesn't care about actual educational reform to legit make it better, just to make everyone subservient to appease Fudge's paranoia.
Exactly. She's just being a pain in the ass. So.
Mm-hmm. And then no Quidditch practice still. She's still holding the carrot of the Gryffindor Quidditch team over their heads, even though she gave the Slytherin team immediate approval.
Of course she did.
Fuck that bitch.
Of course. Right. Right. But they have time for homework now, so that's great.
Yeah, and that's Hermione's looking on the bright side, and Harry and Ron are just like...
Hey, I mean, they got maybe they'll get some more sleep. And then we've like come in on George and Fred.
Yeah, making spectacles of themselves with their puking pastilles, because they keep throwing up, and then and technically Hermione can't do anything about it because they are testing it on themselves, and she can't stop people from buying them.
Right. Super gross. I was like, we could have not included this and that would have been fine, Harry. We didn't need to reflect on that.
But. Yep. And she makes Harry says, you know, I don't get why Fred and George only got 3 OWLs each. They really know their stuff, which is a very interesting point. In terms of pure magical skill, they are very, very talented. Yeah. And in my personal headcanon, like, maybe one is, like, an idea guys and one is an executor of the twins, whichever one that may be. So I have this headcanon in my head that Fred is, like, the ideas guys, and he's the one that actually goes in the library and does the research and actually is very studious. It's just not for his classes. It's for all of this stuff.
Yeah, I think there are people like that. It's just, like, applying yourself to having an intelligence and applying it to something that maybe, you know, definitely their parents would prefer they apply elsewhere. So
yeah. And Hermione's like, oh, they only know flashy stuff that's no real use to anyone, which I take issue with that just because, you know, everything has to quote unquote have a purpose. Mm-hmm. Or everything has to be quote unquote productive. That's feeding into the capitalist lie. Don't do it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I've read a lot of things about
yeah
that,
like so. I you know definitely I'm all for you know reading about all my crap with Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, and pop culture and philosophy and all those things, and maybe it's no real use, but it feeds my soul,
it brings you joy. This ride is short on this earth, so
exactly, so those things are important, Hermione.
Yes, exactly. I agree.
Yep. And so finally, you know, people are slowly trotting off to bed, and poof, Sirius arrives in the flu time.
here we go again with Sirius and his fire. But this one ends very, very differently. And he's kind of like chastising them a little bit, really.
Well, yeah, in the beginning, he's like, you know, we're not allowed to have Quidditch teams or anything, or secret defense against the dark arts groups, said Sirius.
Yeah.
And they're like, how do you know? And it's like, you want to choose your meeting places more carefully. The Hog's Head, I ask you.
Right.
And so basically he calls out Hermione, like, that was a real rookie move.
Yeah, which Hermione, I thought, was like, dang, she's not used to that. It's usually she's like the creme de la creme. And this time it's like, hey, do better. And she's she probably is very, you know, shook her probably.
Yeah. And they're like, who overheard us? Mundungus. He was the witch under the veil.
I don't even know what to say to that.
I'm just really surprised that they gave Mundungus like guard duty to watch Harry after he fucked up so badly over the summer. Like, I would think of everyone else is in rotation to keep an eye on Harry except Mundungus.
Yeah, I guess they believe in second chances there.
I don't know, but like, get Kingsley to do it. Get Tonks to do it. Like, get anyone else to do it except Mundungus. And especially because in this context, he's saying he's totally dressed up in that veil because Sirius says he was banned from the Hog's Head 20 years ago and that barman has a very long memory.
That is a very interesting fact. And I guess be glad it was there's somebody there to, like, you know, look out for his best interest and not somebody doing the opposite. I mean, I don't know. This just is such a rookie move. And I agree.
Yeah. Well, they should have told Harry that, hey, you know, back in the summer, it's like, hey, like we may have someone, you know, in Hogsmeade just to keep an eye on you, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like if, you know, and don't pretend, you know, because a lot of these adults, Harry wouldn't know if not for the order. So it's like, so don't wave at them. Like, don't do anything. Right. They're just there to do their job, to keep an eye on you. And that's that. Like, if they have just told him, again, a lot of this chapter is, which is why I'm always team Sirius of telling Harry.
Yeah.
From that huge fight, you know, between Sirius and Molly Weasley.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, I remember that. Oh, my goodness.
And so, yeah, so Sirius is saying, Ron, your mother says on no account whatsoever are you to take part in any illegal secret DADA group. She says you'll be expelled for sure and your future will be ruined. She also advises Harry and Hermione not to proceed with the group, though she accepts she has no authority over them. And so you want me to say I'm not going to take part in the defense group, he muttered finally. Me? Certainly not, said Sirius, looking surprised. I think it's an excellent idea.
Yeah, I highlighted that because, I mean, it's a very conflicting, probably, moment there for Sirius. But
You do, said Harry, his heart lifting. Of course I do. Do you think your father and I would have laid down and taken orders from an old hag like Umbridge? But last term, all you did was tell me to be careful and not to take risk. Last year, all the evidence was that someone inside Hogwarts was trying to kill you. This year we know there's someone outside Hogwarts that'd like to kill us all. So there is a method to Sirius's madness because there is. Yeah, because I'm definitely one, as I get older, point to Sirius being so responsible, even though literally being a convict on the run, being so responsible and being so much an adult for Harry. And then we get to book 5 and he's completely regressed.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then Hermione is kind of like walking back her idea because, you know, getting expelled is like her worst nightmare. And Harry reminds her it was her idea. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yep. And then he's asking, like, where could we, like, meet? And Sirius is like, the Shrieking Shack. And it's like, no, that's not big enough. And we don't have the means to, like, hide people from, like, the castle to, like, the passageway under the Whomping Willow.
It was a little nostalgia-y, wasn't it, of him to be like, oh, the Shrieking Shack, of course, you know, like. Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I thought of, why didn't Harry ever think of, we can use the Chamber of Secrets, I know the password.
I don't know, I didn't think about that. I forgot the Chamber of Secrets even there.
So. Yes, well, clearly so did Harry.
That's funny.
And so you know, they're, again, so they're thinking, well, I think I'll have to get back to you. He broke off. His face suddenly tense, and then he disappears. And then there's a hand had appeared among the flames, groping as though to catch hold of something, a stubby, short-fingered hand covered in ugly, old-fashioned rings. The three of them ran for it.
This bitch is sneaky as hell, because I wonder how this happened. Like, I'm, ugh, Umbridge. What a, wonders never cease. She's a piece of work.
Yes, and immediately go into chapter 18, Dumbledore's army, and Hermione's like, Umbridge has been reading your mail. There's no other explanation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I...
Yeah, because if you're Umbridge and you saw the note that said same time, same place, mm-hmm. like, you know, unless they're physically at Hogwarts, the only way to communicate with someone would be via the flu time.
Yeah, I'm just like, I don't trust it yet. Like, I just feel like there's something's gonna, this is like, we've done this too many times before, Harry. We have like somebody who's target, oh, it's Snape. And then it's not. I just feel like, take another look, Harry. Maybe it's not Umbridge. So anyway.
But even though it was, you don't think it was Umbridge's hand in the.
I think that was Umbridge's hand in the fire, but I just don't know. Something else is at play. I just don't know what it is yet.
Okay. So they're trying to discuss all this while they're doing silencio charms on bullfrogs and ravens.
Poor bullfrogs and ravens.
Yep. And then what do we got? And good news. They finally got permission to reform the Gryffindor Quidditch team.
Yeah.
It's very much, it's heavily suggested that McGonagall, you know, went to Dumbledore to be like, you know, put an end to this bullshit.
Right. She was just, you know, trying to, I don't know. I can't with this lady, Miss Dolores Umbridge, because she's just trying to make Harry's life miserable. I mean, there's enough people trying to do that. So
like, I'm just curious how much of it is just Harry targeted, or how much crap she gave the Hufflepuff and the Ravenclaws in terms of reforming their Quidditch teams?
Yeah, we don't know that, do we? We just know about Slytherin.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Interesting.
Yep, and so now Hermione's like, we are doing the right thing, aren't we? And this was your idea. And so literally, Hermione is like reconsidering because she's hesitant because Sirius is so on board with it.
Isn't that funny? It's just so funny to see Hermione is so interesting in these chapters because she's just kind of taking this little deviation from, you know, how she's been previously presented. So she's questioning things, you know, usually she's pretty steadfast in, you know, her ideas, but kind of waffling. Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting take on her.
Yeah. And, you know, I've definitely been in this situation where my sister finally, as adults, my sister, older sister, appreciates my fashion advice, even though, you know, she's not as gaudy or as over the top as I am. But she still, you know, she knows that I kind of know her style by now and, you know, and care and, you know, will take my opinion into consideration. But when we were kids and teenagers, like if I liked something, it's like, oh, that'll be great on you. It was literally she wouldn't want it because if Amy liked it, then it was totally off the rails, apparently.
Oh, man. Sisters. I don't know. I had a brother. But I think, you know, the kind of being the at odds with each other, if he likes it, then I have to like something polar opposite. And then I guess we kind of eventually met in the middle, at least with musical taste, which is kind of interesting.
But yeah, so I've totally been there in terms of like, yeah, you literally don't want to do it because this person thought it was great.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all been there at some point with some people. It's like, well, they like it, so forget it.
Yep. And Hermione is like, you know, she's not wrong in terms of her psychoanalysis of Sirius, you know, trying to live vicariously through them. But that's its own separate, like, thing. That doesn't mean that this isn't the thing they should be doing. They're not doing it. Again, it's an added bonus that they get to stick it to the man that they're rebel against the establishment. But the first and foremost purpose of it is to defend themselves from a greater enemy. So this isn't just normal teenage rebellion. So it's like, yeah, Sirius has issues going on, but that doesn't diminish the fact that this is the right thing to do.
Yeah, it's like, save that kind of for later. Let's just kind of focus on the task at hand. And yeah, I don't know. I wonder if it's some of Hermione's like bruised ego trying to kind of sort things out by being like, well, let me tell you about this.
Well, yeah, because I think it's very jarring for Hermione, because in probably in some way she thinks of Sirius as her complete and total opposite. And so the fact that he is so endorsing of an idea she thought of makes her think like, is this who I am now?
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
that, you know, convicts on the run think I have great ideas.
So that's Hermione is, she's like, what am I? I'm headed in a dark direction, maybe. That's what she's thinking. I don't know.
Yeah. Next thing you know, I'll be covered in Azkaban tattoos, too.
That would be, now, hey, right, some, that would be a pretty badass post Azkaban Hermione.
Yeah. So then we've got Quidditch practice, but it wasn't really great or useful because the weather was awful. And they're in the showers and Harry gets this sharp pain in his scar.
Yeah, and he kind of talks a little bit more about what that pain is. Let me go back. But in a little bit more depth, I don't know if – I remember they had a conversation with Dumbledore, but his scar hurt, and he thought
– And Harry's just kind of literally blabbing things out as he thinks it. And it's like he's really angry. He wants something done, and it's not happening fast enough.
Yeah, so he's got like a psychic connection, and Ron even says like, you could take over for Trelawney.
And she's like, you're reading you-know-who's mind. And it's like, no, not his mind, just his mood.
Yeah, and that's where Dumbledore said something like, that was happening last year. He said that when Voldemort was near me or when he was feeling hatred, I could tell. So, interesting.
Honestly, it makes me think of, have you seen those trailers for Turning Red, the new Pixar movie?
I have not, no.
So basically it's a story of this girl who, like, when she feels super strong emotions, it's like a werewolf type thing, but she turns into this giant red panda.
And so
literally every time Voldemort feels extreme emotions, oh my god, Voldemort red panda, that's adorable.
There we go, the next Pixar movie.
Oh my god. But yeah, so anytime now at this point, any extreme of emotion, regardless of what end of the spectrum it is, Harry's now starting to feel it.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And Ron is like, you should go to Dumbledore. And I'm like, and Harry's like, Dumbledore already knows about this shit.
You wonder too, because, you know, yeah, he hasn't had any interaction with Dumbledore lately. Well, like verbal communication. He's been kind of snubbed by Dumbledore. And yeah, I wonder if that's part of his hesitation too and why he dismisses it so quickly. I'm like, yeah, Dumbledore knows about it, but there's a little bit of like, and I don't know what's going on there, so let's not talk about it.
Yeah, so I think that's definitely a huge part of it.
Yeah.
And then, yep, and Harry was reading, and he starts drifting off into dreams. And who shows up?
Is it Dobby? Sorry, I don't know why I got so distressed about that. Oh, it's Dobby. I thought I was going to be worse. Yes, Dobby, which this is very interesting with all the spew stuff going on. So,
yeah. So Dobby has Hedwig. He brought Hedwig back, and Hedwig's all healed. So, yay.
And Dobby's also looks interesting. I mean,
Dobby has hat after hat stacked upon his head. Yes. And Harry realizes it is Dobby who has been taking all of the clothing that Hermione has knitted. And Dobby says, like, I'm the only one who will clean Gryffindor Tower now. The other elves consider it an insult.
Isn't that, and again, that's like, I mean, we kind of, I think I have a hard time talking about these things because I'm definitely not in a place where I can speak about, you know, I'm a white woman. So, you know, the places of privilege and things like that, that we've kind of talked a little bit about. It's just so interesting that Dobby, that this is how his fellow elves, or her, God, I always want to call him a him. Him, her, ugh, everyone give me a break tonight.
Dobby is male.
Okay, him. Winky is female, though.
It's female, yes.
Okay, and poor Winky is still having...
Still not doing the best, which... Still having a bad time. Again, it's only been, like, what, 3-4 months since her master of, like, 20-plus years died?
Yes. Those things take time to get over.
Yes, and... But, you know, what is it? We've got... But, no... Dobby does it all himself, sir, but Dobby does not mind, sir, for he always hopes to meet Harry Potter, and tonight, sir, he has got his wish. But Harry Potter does not seem happy. Was Harry Potter having bad dreams?
Yeah. Dobby calls him out on that, and, you know, he was. Got him lost. But he said he's not really having, like, horrible dreams. He's had worse, but, you know,
yes, whatever. And finally, Harry's like, do you know where we could practice defense against the dark arts? And Dobby, like, you know, gives a little skip, his ears waggling happily, and clapped his hands together. Dobby knows the perfect place, sir. Dobby heard tell of it from the other house elves, which, when he came to Hogwarts, sir, it is known to us as the common go room, or else as the room of requirement.
The room of requirement. First of all, I mean, Dobby doesn't really have the best track record. He's kind of done some crazy things. So, I don't know. I mean, he has helped Harry out, but I was thinking of, you know, the instance at the,
He didn't screw up with the Gillyweed, and that legitimately helped Harry.
That's true. That did probably gain some trust back from the whole pudding or whatever debacle at the Dursleys.
or the bludger or the platform.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess, you know, that one, he kind of helped save everybody. But this is a very interesting development, this
yeah,
room.
So in essence, there's a room of requirement that it's on the 7th floor, and when you really, it only appears when you really, really need it. And Harry goes back into his memory and he remembers Dumbledore mentioning that he really needed a bathroom, and so the room appeared and was filled with chamber pots. You do not want to, if you go back to Fox and the Foxhound podcast and listen to Amanda and Kevin go over this. Oh my God, the toilet humor with Dumbledore. Like, they have...
Oh, man.
Kevin has a morbid fascination with Dumbledore's bathroom habits.
Kevin, Amanda, I think I love you both. That's kind of... I can't. Like, the bathroom humor is just... it's just not for me. I will throw up, probably. So...
Okay, but yeah, so Harry is like, okay, Dumbledore knows about this, so therefore it must be legit.
Yeah, well, that I forgot about that part. Dumbledore does kind of add some credence to Dobby's, like, you know, he's not going to get tricked, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. And so, next day comes along, and about 7:30 next night, you know, leave Gryffindor Tower. They're looking at Marauder's map to GPS to see where everyone is.
the wizard GPS.
Yeah. Yep. And then they go to this patch of wall on the 7th floor. And they're just, you know, going around. We need somewhere to learn to fight. We need to play somewhere they can't find us. And then a highly polished door had appeared in the wall.
I have a question for you. Very in-depth knowledge of Harry Potter. The Room of Requirement. So, you know, because they don't, like, chant this together. It's, like, what they think of. So does the room look different for everybody? Or is it, like,
because they are all wanting the same thing and this is a collective intention,
okay,
it appears the same to all of them.
Okay, so it's like the base intention is really...
Yeah, the base intention is the same, and that's why the other kids can find it as well.
Okay, because I was thinking, like, you know, Hermione's interpretation and Harry, they're all probably saying different things, but they're going to the same place. Okay, good to know.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're going to the same place, but if they were by themselves, like, wanting or needing something else, the room would become something totally different.
Sweet. All right.
Yeah. So their walls were lined with wooden bookcases, and instead of chairs, there were large silk cushions, set of shelves at the end of the room carried a range of instruments, sneakoscopes, secret sensors, and the cracked faux glass Harry was suit. I'm just curious, like, in terms of, again, the metaphysics of, like, manifestation with magic, like, it says a large cracked faux glass that Harry was sure had hung the previous years. So, like, can the broom only, like, garner things that are already in the school?
That was going to be my question, too, because Hermione is like, oh, look at all these books. And she's like, so I think she, like, kind of collects the books. And I'm like, okay, so when they leave the room, do they, like, poof, disappear? I'm gonna need some details
here. I don't even know if this is fully explained, so yeah, but that this is literally the first time in any rereading thinking of it that hard, and yeah, and I think there might be a case where it can only summon things that are in the school itself.
I guess that would make sense, you know. I wish, I don't know if they go back to this room multiple times, but
yeah,
be interesting to see.
Yep. And Hermione, you know, her face glowing, and he saw that the presence of hundreds of books had finally convinced Hermione that what they were doing was right.
Same, girl. That's all it takes.
Yep. Okay. And then all the others start meandering over, and it's like, well, this is a place we found for practice, and you've always found it. It's like, it's fantastic. And, you know, been thinking about the sort of stuff we ought to do first, and what, Hermione? I think we ought to elect a leader. And it's like, Harry's the leader.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, of course, he's a leader, but reluctant to be the leader.
And he's like, oh, right, thanks. And what, Hermione? I also think we ought to have a name.
Yeah, they can't call it the Anti-Umbridge League. Can't it be? And that gets
the Ministry or Morons group.
Yeah. Yes, but good on Jenny. She ends up coming up with the name here.
Yeah, Dumbledore's Army, because that's what the Ministry's fears most, isn't it?
And everybody's like, yep, that sounds great.
Yep, and so Harry chooses to start them off with Expelliarmus. And Zacharias Smith is like, oh, please, I don't think Expelliarmus is exactly going to help us against you-know-who, do you?
Yeah, and Harry shuts that down pretty quick. He's like, listen, I've used it against him. And then everybody was like, oh, damn. Like, yeah. I think, again, I think everybody was kind of like in the excitement of meeting and kind of being deceptive and whatever. And then it gets a little real when Harry's like, by the way, remember what our true purpose is here. I mean, he doesn't say those words, but he kind of, you know, is saying that.
Yeah, and again, no, I'll save it for later. But so he has them divide into pairs. And I remember Daniel Radcliffe, when he was interviewing about, you know, shooting these scenes about Dumbledore's army, it's like he deliberately made his, like, costume similar to the costume that Lupin, the actor that played Lupin when he was a teacher at Hogwarts, to have that same, like, visual of, like, you know, Harry taking after his teacher.
Oh, that's neat. I like that little nod there.
Mm-hmm. And then, so yeah, they get in groups of twos and are, you know, they're at varying degrees of mastery, shall we say. Some are okay. Some are absolutely hopeless.
That's pretty on, you know, pretty consistent with their school participation as well.
Well, just imagine if you, like, K through 12, if you had a different teacher for a different subject every frickin' year and no consistency whatsoever.
Yeah, that would
Literally I always say, you know, in seventh grade it was Anne McCaffrey's The White Dragon that taught me the English language and taught me how to write because my literature teacher sucked so bad.
it makes a lot of difference. Interesting.
Yeah, but anyway, so they're going around and having lots of fun, but still learning. And finally, he goes near Cho and's like, oh, you made me nervous.
This is interesting to me.
She and Cho is like, don't mind her. she said in regards to her friend Marietta. She doesn't really want to be here, but I made her come with me. Her parents have forbidden her to do anything that might upset Undridge. You see, her mom's works for the ministry. Okay. If she doesn't want to be here, then chill. Like, why do you need her here?
Yeah, like, chill. Is it a, like, nervous girl thing? Like, nervous person thing that she's just like, I need one of my friends. But, like, that's not just like, hey, come to the freaking high school Yule ball or whatever with me. Like, this, the repercussions here are a little heavier. So, I don't know.
Yeah, so that's not the greatest. I don't think Cho should have pressured her into doing anything she didn't want to.
No.
But, yeah, so the Dumbledore's army class comes to an end, and they've gone over time, and so they quickly have to leave to make sure they don't get caught out of bounds by Filch.
Yes, yeah.
And it's like, that was really good, Harry, said Hermione. Yeah, it was. Didn't you see me disarm Hermione? Only once, said Hermione, stung. They argued all the way back up to the common room, but Harry was not listening to them. He had one eye on the Marauder's map, but he was also thinking of how Cho had said he made her nervous.
The love. The Cho and Harry love. Oh my goodness.
Indeed. Alrighty then. Yep. The plot thickens, and, you know, yeah, we're past the, oh, woe is me. Umbridge sucks. Umbridge is cutting into my hand. Now they're doing something about it.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad we're to this point. We're almost halfway, a little bit beyond. I think we're almost halfway.
Like 45% probably.
Yeah.
Alrighty then, and now we move on to Gothic Geek Out.
If you would like me to go first, I would say the secret room, the room of requirement, is maybe not Gothic in practice, that it's like, you know, a kind of the mythical or magical properties of it, but very secret room is very Gothic. And
Jane Eyre
is what I think of.
Yeah, a secret room, even by the magical standards of Hogwarts, this is super, super magic and super uber secret.
Yes, and just kind of like the having a, yes, I forget. Yeah, I forget we're in a magical world sometimes. The kind of, yeah, the secret room has a lot of implications in Gothic literature. And of course, like, I don't know why it's always Jane Eyre with me, and I'm not like the biggest Jane Eyre fan, but, you know, Mr. Rochester's OG wife is, mm-hmm, is in a secret room, kind of, so.
Yes, she is. And then, yeah, and it's, even though it's not, doesn't have the candlestick or the book lever, you know.
Right, yeah.
With the dark stone staircase descending down into the bowels of hell, but still.
I wonder, I'm sorry to speculate. I'm like, I wonder how that would have worked. He's like, go in this room. And she, you know, then he's like, oh, I'm going to make this room to keep my wife. Like, let's put that whole situation. And she's like, yeah, no, thanks.
Yeah, no, that's, if you're just like, I need a secret goth laboratory, and then the door would appear, and it would be the candlestick lever and the sconce lever, and then you descend down into the bowels of hell.
You know, that was mine, just the room of requirement.
It was just a good one. I should have thought that. Mine was actually cruelty to animals.
Aww.
Yeah, in regards to Hedwig being, you know, injured, and, you know, it's very heavily implied that this was not, like, a random, like, animal or other bird of prey attacking Hedwig. It's very much heavily insinuated that it was Umbridge herself who attacked Hedwig. And, you know, a lot in Gothic literature, if it's going more the psychotic, you know, psychosis route, you know, sociopath, psychopath, a lot of, an easy way to, like, have antidotes to that is to make the sociopath or psychopath in question be cruel to animals.
Yeah. Yeah. My least favorite thing about any sort of, you know, it's such an easy thing to, an easy target. Helpless. And, you know, sometimes I've talked about vampires, and as we all know, with the Cullens and Twilight, they're vegetarian vampires, but in their definition of vegetarian means they drink the blood of animals. And Never really loved that. Vampire Lestat drinks rats, I think, in New Orleans. I don't
know. Ew.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. Again, was never a fan. Never a fan of Anne Rice. Refused to read her works, even though she passed away.
I saw the movie. I started the book, and I couldn't do it. But I have seen the movie multiple times. So.
Yep. And so, yeah, just the cruelty towards animals to, you know, even in Historian by Elizabeth Kostova, the father's cat gets killed.
Yeah. At
some point. Yeah. They always throw in a killed animal and it's, or injured animal, and it sucks.
You reminded me of my probably favorite gothic book, but my least favorite cruelty to animals scene. And we talked to the author about this in Horrid. And I hated that so much. If you have any, and she said her intention was to upset you with that, with that passage. So,
yeah. Alrighty then. So I think that's enough for gothic stuff. And now we move on to tarot of the day. And so the card that I picked at random was the Knight of Wands.
Knight of Wands.
While the Page of Wands marks the initial spark of a new idea, the Knight of Wands shows the actual pursuit of that idea. With this card appears in a tarot reading, you are charged with energy, passion, motivation, and enthusiasm, and you channel that energy through your inspired action. You have a clear vision about what you want to create, and fueled by your passion and inspiration, you are now moving forward with leaps and bounds to turn your vision into reality.
I would say this is the Dumbledore's army kind of coming to fruition and, you know, them practicing and whatnot.
And in terms of, in a negative, you know, for the bad guys, I see the channel of, like, you know, putting your ideas into reality. I think very much Umbridge is this, you know, the chapter is called Educational Decree Number 24. Like, this is the first time she's exercising her power to create new regulations just on a whim.
Yeah. Gross, ugly, she's the worst.
And then we've got passion, enthusiasm, courage, and confidence are highly attractive to others. Yeah, that makes me think, of course, because, you know, Harry was very much concerned and thinking that, oh, like, she's going to blame me for what happened to Cedric, but she doesn't. And if anything, she admires him. In fact, that all of the, you know, he's done all these brave things, and he's like, Cho thought I was brave.
Oh my gosh. Yes. It's, I'm glad that, you know, I'm glad her reaction wasn't like, you know, you bastard or whatever, because he was trying to do the right thing.
All right, then. So I think that's good. Pretty good card. Like, I kind of forgot what the Knight of Wands represents, but that is much smoother than I thought it'd be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good one.
Okay, and it's time for the Oracle card of the day for my Black Moon Astrology cards. And I picked a zodiac sign, which is your sign, Cancer.
What? Finally!
Yeah, because we've done Scorpio, we've done Pisces, we even did Taurus at some point.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, so now it's time for Cancer.
Oh, good. Though we're also horrible sometimes, so.
Cancers have a depth of feeling not easily seen, and if in the deepest parts of the ocean, fathoms below the surface, but where there is great power. Cancers are reclusive, and they tend to hide their feelings and have alternating moods. They are emotionally vulnerable and are easily wounded. They can be downright touchy, and when feelings are bruised, Cancers can come across as crabby and harsh. They feel for others deeply and are exceptionally sympathetic, but they are highly empathetic. The emotions of others can exhaust them. Do you know who I think of?
Who?
Dobby.
Oh, that's a really good one. Yeah.
Because his moods are, like, totally, you know, he's so up and down in terms of energy.
Yeah, and very, very, you know, he's helping out Winky. He's always, like, ready to help Harry. So.
Yeah, so he is very nurturing in that way.
Yeah.
Which is, Cancer is the sign of the mother, and those ruled by Cancer tend to be overprotective of their offspring, which means they also like to control and take over, which, again, Molly attempting to exert influence over Ron, you know, and saying, like, don't do this, rebellious group.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a Cancer in Harry Potter, like a Cancer sun sign?
I'm sure there is. Oh,
huh. I wonder who it would be. Molly seems easy.
If anything, is Dobby a Cancer? I honestly can't remember.
That, it seems, yeah. Watch it be like, it would be like Malfoy.
No, I want to. I know it's not. No, Malfoy's a Gemini.
Oh, okay. All right.
Gemini. Okay, no, I want to look it up right now. Okay. So. Okay, let's see. Do. So, Cancer in Harry Potter. Hagrid is a Cancer.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, why didn't... Because he's not been in this book very much. That's... I mean, his, like, name has, but... Okay, that seems very appropriate.
Yep, okay then, yeah. Because Hagrid is so motherly.
Yes, and...
giving everyone his rock cakes that no one can eat.
Yes, and when he... You know, when somebody comes after his, like, brood, he's gonna end that real quick, so...
Mm-hmm. Now, when the Cancer card presents itself in a reading, you can be assured emotions are high. You may want to withdraw, or you may be dealing with someone who is withdrawn or depressed at this time. There's a feeling of being connected to the unseen world, and this includes the world of ghosts and spirits. This card indicates inherent psychic abilities and even witch blood. There's a typhoon of power behind Cancer's strong feelings. Harry can detect Voldemort's feelings.
Yeah, that's a very Cancerian trait of Harry.
Yeah, to be very empathetic to the point of fantasy novel that's taking a physical manifestation and what Harry is able to feel and not feel in any given moment.
I think sometimes empathy is, people assume empathy is, you know, only associated with like people you care for, you know, like, oh, I like this person and I'm empathetic. That's not always the case. And, you know, Harry is demonstrating that it might be somebody you are wishing you wouldn't have empathy for.
Yeah, and there's a lot of rhetoric in the pagan community, throwing no shade at anyone or anything, but there is a tendency to view empaths as inherently a good thing. And certainly, you know, I see it more as a neutral thing where, yeah, it has good qualities that you can apply it to be a very understanding and compassionate, like, friend, partner, whatever. But it's also, I consider it's a bad thing if you're taking on other people's emotions and you're just, you know, so much of a nervous wreck that you can't function because you're taking on everyone else's BS.
Exactly. I think empathy is always seen as something positive, but it can be very detrimental.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's all I've got for Cancer.
I could talk about Cancer a lot, but I am restraining myself. I am very, very Cancer. So I take the bad with the good. I know it all. Moody and all that stuff. But anyway,
mm-hmm. And again,
that was a good description.
Yeah, but my husband is very much a Cancer as well.
Well, God bless us both. We're can be pains in the ass. I know I can, but anyway.
Yeah, well. It works out because it's the one sign that's more compatible with me than Scorpio is my opposite, which is makes sense because all my exes were Scorpios and he's the Cancer and he's my husband.
And I think I've said a lot of my exes were Taurus. So, and I'm with a Scorpio. So that's funny.
Alrighty then. And now we move on to our final exercise, fan fiction time.
Do you want me to go?
I think I already brought it up. What if they chose to practice in the Chamber of Secrets? Like, why was this just never an option or even popped into anyone's head? It's this huge ass space.
And there's no basilisk down there anymore, right? That's gone.
No. Or at least it's only its skeleton.
Yeah. And there's the Aragog is not peeping in every now and then, I hope. Okay.
Yeah, no. Aragog's in the forest.
Okay. I don't know. That would be good. That would be a good place to practice. But then we wouldn't have got the, then I guess Harry wouldn't have been exposed to the Room of Requirement, which is pretty cool.
Yes, so. The Room of Requirement is pretty badass. So I think I might think of another one, but yeah, you go.
Okay.
You go. What was yours?
Well, my first one was really similar to that, but I don't know if I really want to go with that, I'll start with that. And I had one more, just based on our conversation at the beginning of this. What if it wasn't available? Like, they could have used the Chamber of Secrets. So that's kind of like, so let's not even go to that one. I don't want to talk about it. My what I came up with, what I like better is, what if Snape was like, Snape and Umbridge were like, you know, vibing, for lack of a better term, not romantically. I'm not writing Snape and Umbridge fanfic. No, thank you. But if you want to do that, no judgment. I'm not going to yuck anybody's yum. But like, what if he did respect her and he was, you know, it kind of wouldn't happen because he already, I don't know. I just thought maybe, what if he played into her a little bit more? What if he was
whether he like genuinely believed or liked her or not, if he would play more into it and like at least let her pretend that he's a little bit of an ally.
Yeah, I think that would have been interesting. And he could have pulled it off very easily.
Yeah, I think he could have pulled it off. I guess it just depends on how public is the knowledge that, you know, the reason Snape is not in Azkaban or didn't get penalized for anything that he did as a Death Eater is because Dumbledore vouched for him, saying that, you know, he gave, you know, he turned spy at the end of the war at great personal risk, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I guess it's more of a sense of, you know, how public is the knowledge that as obnoxious as Snape is, that Snape is very much in Dumbledore's pocket. And so I think, and just, you know, even though maybe outwardly he showed, you know, he's not like the nicest person or the most gracious person, but still, you know, it's just my perception that, you know, Umbridge feels that Snape, regardless of his demeanor, is just too Dumbledore adjacent to be trusted.
Yeah.
And so, like, because everyone who's close to Dumbledore, according to the Ministry at this point, has the plague.
Yeah. Right. Man. Now I'm kind of like, as you were talking, I was like, maybe I shouldn't lean into, like, maybe he should, like, romance Dolores and then get secrets that way. That would be, that's an idea that probably is better suited for another type of book I read. So,
yes. And then, but yeah, he could do it. They take pleasure in torturing and abusing children.
Yeah, well, they should apply that to each other. I don't know. Sorry.
What
in
the 50 Shades of Snape in his dungeon?
You know, if that's what they want to do, they're consenting adults, that's fine. That's sorry, I feel like I'm ruined my own night thinking about that. So anyway, I'm ready to move on.
I didn't pick this because it was the obvious one, but since we haven't discussed it yet, what if Umbridge had caught Sirius?
Oh, had what? Caught Sirius? Oh, man. I'm just trying to envision that. I mean, God, that would just blow things up for the trio pretty quick.
That would blow up. And it's like, how would that even work? Would she have been able to like drag him into like her office or wherever she was accessing the Flu network or...
That's a good question because they're not physically, obviously he's not physically in the fire. It's just like his,
well, like, yeah, his, no, his head, you like, you put your head in the fire.
Okay. Like, I guess I forgot it's about that.
Cause you know, it's basically like half-assed flu travel. Like you could step in fully and, you know, enter the place, but you're not doing that. You're just sticking your head in cause you don't want to leave the place where you're at.
Right. Okay. Wow. I don't know. That's just. What if he... Okay, so I'm thinking...
Because remember when Molly, like, Amos Diggory was in their fireplace and she gave him a piece of toast in his mouth?
Oh, yes. Okay. All right. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, like, honest, you know, again, I guess that this... Even in general, like, we don't know too much of, specifically, of Umbridge's magical abilities. Because honestly, I see, like, even if she had been able to, like, drag him in, like, I feel like... Sirius could like put up a fight and like run for it.
I'm agree with you. I don't know how dexterous she is, you know. Maybe she's like secretly really good at like jujitsu or something and she could tackle him, but he seems like pretty slippery. Like he would get out of that situation.
Yeah, or like, yeah, honestly, I would think even like he would just turn into a dog because again it hurt his disguise. Ooh. is so useless to him now because the Death Eaters already know, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. That would be the mind wanders. I don't know. That would be, how would he get out of that?
Yeah, but if he got captured, then it's the question of would they even bother sending him back to Azkaban, or would they immediately summon a Dementor to perform the kiss? Because
I bet they would. I bet he'd be done. I mean, they already all want him, like, gone anyway, and he's just kind of, you know, some people know what actually happened, but most of the wizarding world, they don't know, right?
And one of my questions that I posed to Amanda and Kevin in their podcast is, like, it seemed a bit of a plot hole that it's why would Umbridge think, like, the story is that Sirius is a murderer, like, helped and was complicit in the murder of Harry's parents. So why would Harry be talking to Sirius Black of all people in terms of, you know, if this is still the narrative? And, you know, Kevin's assessment, which I think is probably correct, is I think there's a headcanon that basically is that the Ministry already knows that maybe Sirius is innocent, but doesn't care at this point and is willing to let Sirius be collateral damage.
Okay, that's interesting.
Because it's always been in my headcanon that between books 3 and 4, when after Sirius escaped but before things blew up between Fudge and Dumbledore, like it's always my headcanon that probably at some point between that Dumbledore said to Fudge, like, hey, like you may want to reconsider like relooking into like the Sirius Black investigation and maybe explore other options. And I think from that, paranoid Fudge, who is now an enemy of Dumbledore, he's thinking like, that motherfucker knows where Sirius Black is.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, I don't know. I'm just trying to process all the possibilities.
Mm-hmm. It was a close shave, to be sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Good Lord.
Yep. Alrighty then, and thus concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time, where we have chapters 19 and 20, The Lion and the Serpent, and Hagrid's Tale.
Whoa!
You didn't see the chapter titles beforehand?
No, I don't look. I try not to look. So sometimes I look, but I didn't this time. So anyway.
So yeah, that's a giveaway. Chapter 20, Hagrid's Tale.
Yay, good. I'm excited to know what he has to say.
Yep. Alrighty then. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.